Welcome to the Miles to Memories podcast. I'm Sean Coomer, your host, joined today by a special guest, Grant Thomas from Travel with Grant, someone I've known for quite a few years. And welcome to the show, Grant. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me, Sean. It's nice to be on your podcast.
I forget. Have you not done the podcast before? For some reason in the back of my head, I thought you had been on years ago.
I am not sure. I've done other podcasts, but that was a few years ago before the pandemic, and I don't think I've done a podcast since then. So hopefully it's well worth the wait.
Oh, I'm sure it is. So Grant and I go way back like 10 years now. It's crazy to think it's been 10 years basically since prior to boarding, which was, you know, the, what was it? The undercard or the small dogs that kind of gave us a chance to get onto boarding area. It was a alternate network, which eventually got folded into boarding area. But we were among the first handful of blogs on prior to boarding. And that was 2014, I think, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
So we've both been doing this a long time and been in this game a long time, traveling, writing about our travels and all that. So I'm looking forward to hearing about some of your trips and everything that's going on with you and some tips you have, whatever insight you want to share here. Before we get into the show, I talked on the last show with Joe. I just spent a few days in Nashville with all the Hilton executives talking about all their different brands. So next week on the show, I will go into all that with Joe and kind of just talk about the brands. It's crazy, Grant, because they have 23 different brands with Hilton, and that doesn't even include like SLH, Nomad, Graduate, some of the stuff that they have coming up that they're sort of integrating in. And, you know, I went in there skeptical, like I think a lot of people are in the community, about why we need so many brands. And I'm not going to say 100% understand it all, but I left with a much better understanding of why there are so many brands and sort of what they're trying to do with all of them. And I was kind of excited about that. It was very interesting to have a press trip that was focused on their brands, not about the loyalty program as much, even though we did talk about that, but they were really trying to showcase all the different brands that they have.
Yeah, I can probably name probably 5 or 6 brands for Hilton. And yeah, I don't know how they keep track of them all.
Yeah, it was interesting kind of learning about the changing demographics of travelers and what they want. Like maybe our parents, when they traveled, or the previous generations, they wanted sort of the same hotel in every location, same kind of room product, same kind of everything, and where modern travelers are a little different, and then how they're trying to hit different price points. So I actually think for hotel nerds, it'll be an interesting topic to go over, and I will do that next week. I also wanted to tease, next week we have a big announcement for the show, which Grant doesn't even know what it is, but there is a big announcement. So I just wanted to put that out there. Look forward to that next week. Some cool things that I'm working on, and I can't wait to share that. I wish I could do it today, but it's not quite all ready. But next week I'll be doing that. So got that little housekeeping out of the way. So Grant, I wanted to ask you, so you write Travel with Grant, it's on boarding area, and you've been doing it for 10 years, like we said, or more. Actually, when did you launch it? More than 10 years ago, right?
It's actually approaching my blog anniversary. So May 1st, 2013 was when I went live. So we're almost to, I guess that would be 11 years in a few days.
Congratulations on that, because longevity in doing this isn't always the easiest thing to accomplish. And when we started, it was bloggers, right? And now it's influencers, and the entire space has changed. Social media has sort of matured through all of that. I think it's commendable to still be doing this, I guess, for both of us to be doing it independently all these years later. But what was the reason that you sort of started Travel with Grant, and how do you think it has evolved over the years?
Well, a lot of people start blogs because they want to tell their friends and family like what's going on in their life. But for me, it was kind of the opposite. Like my friends and family like didn't really care about miles and points. So I thought I might as well share my information and knowledge with the world that does care about miles and points. So that's where the idea for Travel with Grant came from.
I'm kind of the same way. I got tired of talking to people that I know and watching their eyes roll over and spinning my wheels. So I almost stopped talking to anybody that I knew in real life about any of this stuff. And so this was sort of an outlet for me to talk to people that are like-minded. It's one of the reasons I love our Diamond community, and I love sort of connecting with other people in the community and talking about our crazy lives that we live because of this hobby. And I don't have to worry about, does somebody think I'm bragging, or does somebody take what I'm saying the wrong way about having been here or there? Because I'm truly blessed to have been wherever I've gone, but I could be in a room full of travel hackers or people in this space, and anywhere I could say I've gone, they've gone, and they've gone more places. And I talked about this a little bit on the episode with Ryan Smith, who's been to every country in the world. I've been to 71 countries, and compared to his 193, it's nothing. And so that always keeps you in perspective. And I love that doing the blog has led me to those people. I don't have to worry about how I relate to people in the real world. I just sort of tone it down because they'll be like, hey, you're the travel guy, right? I'm like, yeah, I travel, but I still don't talk about anything unless somebody shows real interest in it.
I agree. I think I really shine when someone talks about like a new credit card they got. And then I kind of ask them a lot of questions, like how they came to that decision and what they plan to do with the bonus. And I think it's a little overwhelming for some people because most people don't think about credit cards nearly as much as we do and memorize facts like earning categories and annual fees and different perks. So we're definitely a unique crowd.
And I do think the loyalty scheme has changed over the years, or the space has changed a lot where programs have matured a lot. So I feel like even normal people are constantly inundated with all these loyalty programs, and they think on whatever level that they're maximizing it, and they get a little offended if you start to try to give them advice on stuff. So I stay out of it. Even when somebody gets a new credit card, unless you're a really close friend of mine or you specifically ask me for advice, I stay out of it because I don't want people feeling bad. And I guess ultimately at the end of the day, if they're getting something instead of nothing, it's a win for them. And so I've had too many conversations go sideways in that way. Have you ever had that where somebody's just like, I don't want your advice?
Sometimes my wife gives me that reaction when I say, oh, you should have used that card. You should have used this card or done Apple Pay here. And that doesn't get me very far most of the time. So I'm trying to rein it back in. But sometimes when I'm at a checkout lane, I'll see what other cards people are using. And you're like, oh, that's not the best card to use here. But I don't say anything. I just think that.
The worst here in Vegas is because so many people live on tips. You'll be at the grocery store and people are just paying with cash. And that does kill me to see them do that. Not only does it take longer and it's annoying, but you know they're giving up that. But I've never seen more than in Vegas people paying with cash. Everybody gets to beat to their own sort of drum, which is good. But the space has changed a lot. When we were starting to write about this stuff, it was sort of the Wild West back then. You could get, you know, 7 cards from the same bank in the same day. Chase personal cards were pretty much free pickings, and there was a lot of opportunity. Bonuses were probably smaller than they are today, though. So maybe you had to work a little harder for some of the bonuses. But we've seen over the years the space change significantly with all these new rules and product rules and family rules and 524 and Amex pop-ups. And how do you see those changes as affecting sort of how you view the space and how you're kind of approaching your miles and points earning?
Yeah, going back to what you said earlier, before Chase 524, I felt like I could just get any Chase card I wanted, keep it for a year, close it before the annual fee was due, and then apply for the same card again. Like, you didn't have to think twice about keeping track of which cards you've had or when you got them. I remember the Chase Hyatt credit card. It was 2 free night certificates valid at any Hyatt in the world. And I think it was either after your first purchase or after $1,000 spend. And we don't see those type of bonuses anymore.
Yeah, we have seen, like on the American Express side, crazy bonuses that have gotten very outsized in value, and even no lifetime language offers where people are able to get them. But that's more the exception than the rule. That old Hyatt credit card offer was great because there was another little wrinkle to it. If you were a Diamond member under their old Gold Passport program, when you applied for the credit card, you would get those 2 free nights in a suite. And back then, Diamond members didn't get guaranteed suites like globalists do now. And they had a match that you could do. So you would get the status for a few months. So I remember doing the match right before we went to Hawaii. And that was the first time I got a taste of top tier Hyatt status. And then we also got the credit card, which we then used for a suite at the Park Hyatt Tokyo on another trip. And yeah, those were the days where you had some outside stuff. The best thing about the Hyatt credit card, and I didn't get this and I regret it, is they had for a period of time during that whole era, like a day or so, where they guaranteed if you got the credit card, you would get lifetime Diamond status, which turned into lifetime Globalist status. It was a marketing mistake, but they honored it for anybody who got the card during that time. So I know a few people in the community who are rocking lifetime status, lifetime Globalist status with that one credit card that they got, you know, 10 years ago. So, you know, hopefully you still get opportunities once in a while, but that one was a pretty sweet one.
Yeah, I must have missed that deal by a couple days or years, but that sounds like an awesome deal. And I think with credit cards, everything changes so much, but I always try to get the cards and hold on to the cards that you no longer can get, like the old Chase IHG Select card, the $49 comes with the capped free night certificate and the 10% rebate. And then holding on to a Ritz-Carlton card that you can't get directly, but you can upgrade from a Chase Marriott Bonvoy card to. Just certain cards like that, that once the window of opportunity closes, you just hope that you made it inside before the door shut.
So let's talk about the Ritz card, because maybe people don't know a lot about that. And one of the main reasons I know a lot of people have had the Ritz card over the years is because the priority pass was so good, because you got it not only for the primary card holder, but also for all the authorized users. And it was one of those cards that included restaurants as well. Although recently we learned that, I believe as of July 1st, it's going to lose that benefit along with the Sapphire Reserve. But I believe the Bonvoy Boundless, or you can convert, but a lot of people get the Bonvoy Boundless card and then switch it to a Ritz card. What are the main benefits of the Ritz card? Why do you have it and why do you hold it?
So that card has a $450 annual fee, but you get $300 airline incidental credit, which you can use for seat upgrades, in-flight purchases, lounge access, checked bags, onboard Wi-Fi. I use it for change and cancellation fees for certain airlines, and it's not linked to us or not tied to a specific airline. So you can use it as you see fit. And it also comes with a 85K Marriott free night certificate, which you can use at almost all Marriott properties in the world. So if you value the $300 airline incidental credit close to face value, then that means the 85K free night certificate, as long as you get more than $150 value, you come out ahead. And it's not hard to find a Marriott property, especially overseas, that is way more than $150.
Yeah, that certificate is quite valuable. It's strange that this card hasn't been available for many years now, and yet you can still convert into it. So it's still an opportunity for some people out there if it's something you're looking for. Like I said, the priority pass benefit is being devalued a little bit, but I doubt that that was like, that's really a game changer. As you said, there's still a lot of value. Those 85K certs are quite valuable. That will get you a well higher than $150 hotel. And the incidental credit is a little bit more difficult than something like the Sapphire Reserve, right? As far as getting it to cash in, but your experience hasn't been too bad with getting your credits on that card?
No, you can either call the number on the back of the Ritz-Carlton card or send a secure message. And either way, it's a pretty simple process. Just tell them which purchases you're talking about, and they'll process the statement credits for you.
So what has your credit card strategy been like recently? A lot of people, you know, it's funny, we get a good mix in the audience of people who are newer to the hobby, newer to all of this, and they get excited and they're ready to go. And then you have people who have been around a long time and they go through various phases of burnout or slowing down, not being as aggressive. How is your credit card strategy sort of working? Are you planning it around specific trips? Are you kind of just jumping on to better offers as you see them? Are you being as strategic or just sort of picking and choosing?
I don't know if I have a great strategy. I am well over 524, so I've kind of accepted the fact that I'll never get another Chase card in the near future, but there's so many good signup bonuses and cards from all the other issuers, and the offers are always changing. So when I see an offer that fits my needs, I'll go for it. I usually wait until I have a large purchase to make. So like property taxes or income taxes or different insurance bills. And then I'll see what credit cards are offering decent signup bonuses then. So then I know I can hit the minimum spend in one or two purchases easily and be done with it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people get short-sighted with 524 and they over-strategize and then they pass up on other offers. I haven't been as aggressive with my credit card signups recently as some other people, but it's certainly a strategy to stay under 524 and it can be lucrative, but you really are passing on a lot of other stuff with the hopes that you'll get it later. Or, you know, I just know a lot of people who have blown past 524 and are very happy about it because then they don't have it looming over them. They're not having to worry about it. They understand the restrictions with it, but it does open up so many other doors and it makes it, I don't know, more pleasurable, it seems like, for them than to pass up all the cool stuff for the idea of staying under 524. And for people who are new, that doesn't mean that you don't go for some Chase cards early on. It just means over the long term, if you're trying to stay under that, then you're probably giving up some opportunities to get other cards because at some point you're gonna hit it. And it's something to be aware of because I feel like newer people and even the consensus among people in the hobby a long time is, yeah, do everything you can to stay under 524 because Chase is the best. And Chase does have great welcome offers and great cards, but as you say, there's so many other players out there, in smaller players, bigger players, all kinds of different cards.
Yeah, you just have to figure out, like, if Chase programs and credit cards work for you, focus on that. But the world's pretty big, and there's a lot of other airline and hotel programs that don't work with Chase that you don't want to kind of exclude from consideration, especially if you like Hilton. Amex has a ton of Hilton cards. You can get a ton of points that way. I don't know. I think people overvalue staying under Chase 524, and I'm currently, I think I have around 36 to 38 open credit cards, and I kind of look at them like tools in a toolbox. Like, each card is great for a specific use, but there's no card that's great for everything.
Yeah, and you know, when you say that, it makes people's heads spin. Hopefully not people listening to this podcast, but we talk about why you're not talking to normal people when they hear you have 36 or 38 credit cards. That is an overwhelming amount for them. I'm pretty close. I think I'm in the high 20s. And that's pretty normal, I think, in the hobby. And there's people that take advantage of authorized user offers. Like, there's been some on American Express where they're getting dozens and dozens of authorized user cards and they're tracking everything. And you talked earlier about how it used to be, how you didn't have to track as much when you're getting cards and have you, whether you had a card before. What do you use now? Are you using a spreadsheet, or how do you keep track of everything that's going on with all of these cards you have to make sure that you don't make a mistake?
Yeah, I'm pretty detail oriented in terms of tracking credit cards and bank account bonuses. So I have a spreadsheet where I have all the open cards and then a separate tab for all the closed cards. So I can see what cards I've had in the past, the dates I got them, the dates I closed them, the dates the bonuses posted, different historical things. Because, and then I also download all my credit card statements every month from all the cards, just in case I have to look back at a charge I made or when the bonus points posted or for whatever reason. So I think being kind of super detailed, especially with credit cards, is to your advantage.
How much time do you spend every month with all of those cards, downloading the statements and sort of going through everything?
I try to switch my statement closing dates to be all around the first couple days of the month so that all the statements, I guess all the statements close early in the month. Then I download the statements, I pay the bills early in the month, and then I don't have to focus on it the rest of the month. Probably maybe like half an hour to 45 minutes a month, just organizing that because I have a system in place. So it's pretty easy.
Yeah. And I think that's valuable to have hard copies of your statements and everything else, having records of that, or not hard copies, digital copies, but a copy that's not stored in the cloud on the bank server, but on your own device. It makes it easier to go back. And for people who maybe got in and weren't so organized when they started, you can do a lot of this from your credit report. So if, let's say you haven't built a spreadsheet and you want to go back and sort of figure out when you opened cards. I find the credit report's a good sort of source of that. It'll have the account number and then, you know, your open dates. And so if you want to start building a spreadsheet, it's never too late, even if, you know, maybe you have a half a dozen cards and you're keeping it in your head. Probably good to set up a system as you grow, because it just becomes so complicated and there's so much going on. And, you know, while you think you can keep it all on the top of your head, I used to be great at that, but not so much anymore. It just becomes too much and you drop the ball on something, you miss a bonus. Have you ever done that? Have you ever missed a welcome offer, the spending, made a mistake on a date or something like that?
Not that I can recall. The only sign-up bonus mistake I did was going for the Bank of America Spirit Airlines credit card and getting the Spirit miles and not being able to use them within like the 12 months and then closing the card and letting the miles expire. So that was my only kind of regret in terms of sign-up bonuses. But for the most part, if a bank gives you 3 months to make the spending requirement, I try to do it in 1 month or 2 months just so I have that 1 month buffer in case an order gets returned or canceled and I didn't actually hit the minimum spend. So I try to hit it early and not wait to the very last day to get it done.
The big mistake I made was never missing a welcome offer. Although maybe I did at some point. I don't remember. I probably talked about it on the show, but interest on credit cards, because you get that new credit card, everything's on auto pay. So that's how I set up everything. But when you get a new card, I have had it where I didn't get that set up right away. And I end up hitting a late fee on the first month and paying interest on it. So that's, you know, a big deal. A lot of banks will give you forgiveness if you pay on time. If you're a good customer, they will at least forgive the late fees, maybe not always the interest. But, you know, you can always ask about that. But I feel like that's a pretty common mistake. I do know some people have missed welcome offers. Even more reason to just be organized. And some of the apps, you know, we talk about Travel Freely. That's my sort of favorite of them. The one I recommend people just because of the way that they put out content and the way that they show offers, making sure that people are getting the best offer possible. But there are many different apps that you can do this as well. When you sign up for a card, you can input it in there. You know, card pointers I've been using more lately where they add the offers automatically in the background. That works really well, but they also have a tracking system. So you can put in your welcome offer and it'll give you notifications. You can put in when you signed up for the card, it'll remind you when annual fees are being due. And so that can kind of supplant a spreadsheet that a lot of old school people are using. And there's lots of ways to be organized in this hobby. And, you know, as much as somebody who sort of struggles with that all the time, keeping everything organized, I still use an old school spreadsheet. Even though I have used these various apps, I just haven't put all of my stuff in them all the time. And if you can keep it all in the top of your head, great. But maybe you're not playing hard enough. Or maybe you're just a genius. I don't know. Smarter than me.
Yeah, you probably definitely smarter than both of us combined if you can keep track of all that. But I do keep spreadsheets for all my flights and then a separate one for hotel free night certificates because those dates are all over the place. And it helps to know like which free night certificates are expiring the soonest so you can focus on those for your next trip. I also keep like when I use them, I'll put them at the bottom of the spreadsheet in a different color. That way I know, oh, this certificate's going to post in 2 weeks. I can wait for that to post and then book something. So be as detailed as possible. It goes a long ways.
So speaking of free night certificates, that's another area where I feel like people get very overwhelmed in the hobby because we end up with, you know, just on this, we talked about Marriott certs already and IHG certs. And of course, there's Hyatt certs and Hilton certs, which are they're the creme de la creme, in my opinion, of certs, just because you can use them anywhere. And good news, I did ask the head of Hilton Honors, not that it couldn't change, but as of now, they don't have plans to change those. So they're really happy with the way that's worked out. You know, they used to be for weekends only, and now they're for every day. But you end up with certs in so many different programs. What is your sort of strategy? Do you just, you have different cards, you get them, and then you're just trying to work them into the trip? I don't have all mine centralized into a spreadsheet, and that's not a bad idea. They're not always top of mind in every trip that I'm planning. And then I do occasionally come across one that, you know, I have forgotten about. I haven't lost any, thankfully, but I've definitely cashed in some Hyatt ones for points. And I've scrambled at the last minute a couple times with Hilton to use theirs. So yeah, spreadsheet. And do you have any other sort of strategy going around free night certs?
I am not trying to optimize these certificates to like the most, like the highest possible level. Like for an 85K Marriott free night certificate, if I get somewhere between 60 and 80, I'm happy with. I'm not going to try to wait and wait and wait until I find the perfect opportunity for it because chances are it won't line up with my schedule or travel plans. And the one that's a little tricky are the IHG Premier and Premier Business free night certificates because those are good for 40,000 points plus you can top them off. And then IHG point rates changed daily, I feel like. So you might find a place that's 50,000 points. So you'll use your 40K plus an additional 10,000 points. And you check a few days later, it might have dropped down to 42,000 points. So you can cancel that reservation. You get your free night back, your points back. You rebook it at the newer rate for only the 2,000 additional points. So it's kind of, you have to be on top of stuff like this.
One nice thing about free night certificates is how you can top some of them off like IHG and Marriott now. Hyatt says they have no plans for that, unfortunately. Maybe they'll change their mind. But I do like the ability to top off, and they've become much easier to use online too. Although IHG was always very good with that. Hyatt specifically, they've made their system a lot better. Hilton, not quite there at all. Where are they at with this? I don't know. But it's been good to see that you have more flexibility and more ability to top them off and to use them in certain ways. But I guess we have some trade-offs there because we used to have flat award charts and lots of good value where everything is usually based on the cash price now. So you don't get as much outsized value with them. But they're a very important part of the hobby. And like I said, I've struggled sometimes with planning a trip and then I don't incorporate one. And then I at the last minute, I'm scrambling to use it. And I used to get some great redemptions. Like I used to use my IHG certs every year at the Intercontinental Hong Kong, which was like a $600 a night hotel. Incredible value for the cert. So I never thought too much about it because I was in Hong Kong enough and I would just use it there. Over the years, I have kind of come to your side of it and I worry less about getting the maximum value from them. I just want to get a decent value because I would rather just use it when I have that chance and then not have to worry about it later. And I feel like that's certainly the better way to go.
The trade-off of the mental bandwidth to remember to use these things and try to get optimal value versus getting a good enough value that is way more than your annual fee. Like, I think that's a good approach. And the Hyatt Free Night Certificate, the category 1 through 4, it hasn't changed ever as far as I'm aware. And that's always on my prediction list / wish list for miles and points. And they just seem to ignore everyone's request to bump it up to a category 1 through 5 and make it top offable. And I don't know, hopefully they come around one day because they're like the only hotel chain that hasn't made modifications to their free night certificates in any way.
Yeah, it was super interesting. I did a press trip with Hyatt last October, I think. And that question, this is right around when they were launching all the changes to their program and being able to transfer certs and stuff online, which is great. Transferring club access awards, guest of honor awards, everything that they did, I thought was very positive. But when the question was posed to them about topping off their free night certs, they just sort of froze up and said that it's not something that they're wanting to do right now. It's something that they've considered. So there's some sort of a reason that they're not saying why they want to do it. But on top of that, with all the changes, you know, you had the 1 through 4 and then the 1 through 7, and then they introduced category 8, and then now they have that ultimate free night cert at 150 nights. So they implemented a ultimate free cert, even though a lot of people aren't going to get that one. And then you still have the 1 through 7 and you still have the 1 through 4. It can be confusing. And I do wish that they would do that. But Hyatt does pretty good on a lot of things. And none of these programs are perfect. And they all have their little quirks in the way that they're trying to do it. I love Hilton. Like I said, the fact that you're pretty much open to any hotel, that is amazing. And it used to be on the weekends, which was always frustrating trying to find, like, I remember using them for Grand Wailea, trying to find Friday, Saturday, Sunday nights with the old certs. But the fact that you can just do it anywhere, the value that you can get is incredible. I've talked about the Waldorf Cabo here, getting upgraded to a 2-bedroom villa, had some other issues at that property, but the using a free night cert and then getting a $3,000 night room is, I mean, that sort of value is insane.
Agreed. Yeah. It's amazing what these free night certificates will open up the world to. So places you'd never be able to afford or want to pay points for, but oh, you can use a free night certificate. Okay, why not?
Yeah, and they've made the ability to get free night certificates better. One other thing while we're on the subject of Hilton is just came to mind is they just redid the business card, the American Express Hilton business card, and they removed the free nights from that card. And there was some concern that maybe they would be considering that strategy for some of their other cards, even though they just revamped them last year. And it seems like they said for now they're happy with where everything's at. So hopefully we don't see anything happen with the free night certs on the other cards like we did with the business card. They do seem to be happy with their overall strategy there. And it's been working, they say. So financially, let's hope it keeps going.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of these revamped hotel cards that don't offer these free night certificates anymore, like the Marriott Bevy or whatever the other one is that's the twin of the Bevy that don't offer free night certificates but have high annual fees. I just don't understand what their target audience is for these cards.
Yeah, I wonder if they've gotten feedback saying that people don't want the free night certificate. I mean, who doesn't want a free night certificate? With the business card specifically, Hilton said and their executives said that they're targeting very specific demographics and they wanted the business card to be more focused on business. And they felt that adding the credits and the other things that they did made it more for their demographic. Of course, they doubled the annual fee on that. And we've seen other changes. So I don't know what the specific thing was for that. They're just saying they're being more hyper-focused on making sure every card works for the specific demographic they're looking at. I think business owners like free nights, so I don't know how that all works. But yeah, it is a strange thing. We're seeing higher annual fees. We're seeing more breakable credits, right? All these quarterly credits and stuff like that. You know, the coupon bookification of credit cards. And as much as like people in this hobby seem to complain about it, it's either working really well financially for the banks, or they're finding in their research that people like it, because I don't like it. And the more cards I have, you know, we have 30 cards, 30 plus cards, it becomes so hard to keep track of all these credits. It's just another thing to keep track of. And it just becomes way too much, I think, at some point.
Yeah, I just closed my Amex Business Platinum card last week after I got some of the last few statement credit benefits I was looking for. So I had a few Alaska Airlines seat purchases that didn't automatically trigger the bonus. So I had to reach out to Amex to have them manually apply the $200 airline credit towards those. And I made a few last minute Dell purchases to use up the $200 Dell credit for the first half of the year. And luckily the wireless credit's the easiest thing, but it's the smallest thing they give you, which is a shame because I'm sure businesses spend way more than $10 a month on phone service. But that card I've had for a while, but with the loss of the Centurion Lounge guest access, it just didn't make sense long-term to prepay the $695 annual fee and then have to jump through multiple hoops in order to get the statement credits to offset the annual fee. So I was just decided to exit the hamster wheel of the Amex Business Platinum.
Yeah, I have a few of them, and a few is too many. So I'm kind of feeling the same way, trying to downsize my overall footprint with that. I mean, it's a brilliant thing, like the credit for the wireless services. Their whole thought is, let's give you 10 bucks and you can use that card to pay for your entire bill. Now, obviously, people in the hobby will strategize, and there's crazy people that have so many business platinum cards. But yeah, we've seen, you know, you talk about the Ritz card at 450. That's what every one of these cards used to be, 450. And they've all gone up and up and up, and now 695 for the business platinum. And it's even when you're trying to justify it and you're looking at the value of the benefits, some of them are duplicated on other cards. And then it's still a lot of upfront money. I mean, $695, sure, if you're getting a nice welcome offer, but you know, the idea is American Express wants you to keep these cards. They want to show you the long-term value. And for, you know, everybody, it's not always the case. And then like for families too, like you talk about with Centurion Lounge access, I don't really go there with my family anymore because I don't want to pay for my daughter. And, you know, I would do it if I had to on a long layover. I've never been one to go to the airport super early, but I just went into the Centurion Lounge before flying to Nashville last week. And that was the first time in the Vegas one I had been there in over a year. So I'm not using those perks as much. And then if we're honest, what is the value there? You know, oftentimes there's long lines for the lounges. Oftentimes, you know, the food is okay, but is it the best? I'm not drinking alcohol, so I'm not getting the value there. And yeah, when you right size like what these benefits mean to you, you don't always come back at what these crazy fees are, because the fees, not just on the high-end cards, but as you point out, like on all the cards, have just gone up over the years.
Yeah, I think it really makes, like, you really have to look, like, crunch the numbers to see how many visits you do per year to a Centurion Lounge and how much you value each visit. And if you spent that money elsewhere at a restaurant or a different bar inside the airport, like, is what's most cost effective for you? And I did like a lot of the airports I would travel through had Priority Pass restaurants, and I would actually prefer those over the lounges because it's, I think, better quality food. It's a big loss to have the Ritz-Carlton lose the restaurant access for Priority Pass. But luckily, with the U.S. Bank Altitude Reserve, you get 8 visits per year to lounges, restaurants, or experiences. And then there's a U.S. Bank business credit card. I forget which one it is, but you get 4 visits for those cards. So between those two cards I already had, that's 12 visits to an airport restaurant that participates in Priority Pass. So that should probably cover most of my travel, unless I'm traveling in business class internationally, and then they have other lounges that you can access for free as well.
The only other big card that's going to still have the restaurant access is the Venture X business. I have that card, so it's not a huge deal to me. I don't even have the Priority Pass for that card because I stopped signing up for Priority Passes because I have so many cards that get it, and then it gets confusing. So I just always had my Sapphire Reserve Priority Pass, and that's the one I carried everywhere because I knew it gave me two guests and I knew it had restaurant access and I never had to really worry about it beyond that. So finally, I'll have to sign up for a new one. So speaking of restaurants, I wanted to ask you about InKind. I talked, I think, on our Vegas show. I'm not sure if I talked on the regular podcast, but InKind recently had a city offer, and there's been a bunch of American Express offers over the years where you can get very good discounts on credit with them. And I sort of, a few years ago, looked at InKind, and then there wasn't very many restaurants, and I sort of just put it away and didn't think about it until a friend of mine was in Vegas a few weeks ago, and we started looking, and there's, you know, there's not a million restaurants in Vegas, but there's like 10 or 12 good ones. And I know you wrote about how New York City is really the great center of it. And I thought it would be worth kind of talking about, because even if you don't have these restaurants in your city, when you're traveling, this can be a great way to save on food, right?
Yeah, definitely. The InKind restaurants are really popular in the bigger cities like San Francisco, LA, New York. But outside the big cities, it's pretty slim pickings. But if you're traveling, if you live in a big city or you travel to a big city, take a look, because you might be surprised which restaurants are on there and which, like, how many choices you have. They have a kind of a wide range between like really high-end Michelin-starred restaurants and then some local chains that might have six or seven locations in a city. And there's decent number of options. And if you can get the credit for, I don't know, 50 to 60% off with these various Chase offers and Amex offers and sometimes City Merchant offers, you can cut the cost of your dining out expenses.
And the way the app works is you have credit or you have a credit card tied to it. So you can use your credit that you get through various offers to pay for stuff. And then you still have to pay for your tip through the app with your credit card. But you're basically paying the restaurant through the InKind app. And that's how it sort of works. And yeah, I just kind of opening my eyes up to it again, saying, oh, they've really expanded. There's some good coverage in a lot of cities. And even in Vegas, there's, like I said, some decent restaurants for people coming to Las Vegas. It's not going to be every restaurant, every single place. But I think both Doctor of Credit and Frequent Miler had good articles recently about the city offer on how you could stack portals and different versions of it. And a lot of times, like with the city offer, there was a specific link to buy the credit that way, but there was another link out there that gave you another discount on top of, you know, that, and that tended to work with stuff. So keep your eye out on the space, and people will tell you sort of how to accumulate these when the offers do come. But as you said, you're saving 50% or more. I mean, some offers in the past have even been better than that, which is crazy. And it makes me very sad that I didn't hit it a little bit harder, like those early Amex offers, which were almost giving you 100% off on credit. But oh well for me. But I'm focused on it now. And I just thought with your article that you just wrote that it would be worth highlighting it. And, you know, if you do sign up with somebody's referral, Grant has one. I'll put his article in the description. And I have one. Then you get 25 off 50 on your first meal. So you can sign up with somebody's referral. Everybody has one, and start off that way as well. So let's close with maybe a little bit of your upcoming travel. So you have an upcoming trip to Europe, right? Going to Scandinavia, flying Aer Lingus, the best named airline. So tell us about it. What was your sort of planning philosophy and what you're going to do when you're up in Europe?
Yeah, so back in March 2020, my wife and I were supposed to go to Ireland for her spring break. She's an elementary school principal now, so I try to focus on fun spring break and summer vacation plans for her. But we had this huge trip planned to go to Ireland in March 2020, and 2 days before we were supposed to leave, that's when they shut down all flights to and from Europe due to the COVID pandemic. So that was I hate canceling trips, especially when it's a few days away. That really just tears at my heart. So this trip is kind of, we're trying to redo what we had planned a little bit. So for our trip this summer, I found Aer Lingus flights from Denver to Dublin using 55,000 Alaska miles per person for business class. We have to reposition from San Francisco to Denver to catch that flight. And then from Dublin, we're going to spend a few days there, then fly over to Helsinki, Finland for a few days, and then fly over to Stockholm, Sweden for a few days. And then my wife really wanted to fly KLM business class because they get those little tiny Delft Blue houses that they give away. So I found a flight that on KLM that went through Amsterdam to Chicago. That one wasn't as good a deal, but that was about 82,500 miles per person. And then we'll fly home from Chicago. So it'll be a fun trip. We had a great time in Copenhagen, Denmark last summer. So I thought it would be fun to explore some other Scandinavian and Nordic cities this summer.
It was interesting. I was having a conversation with a few travelers the other day, and we were all talking about Scandinavia in general, whether it be, you know, Denmark or Norway, Sweden or Finland, and they're all great places to travel. I mean, so much fun and such interesting culture and part of Europe that maybe doesn't get as much attention from some people, but it absolutely should be. Yeah, with KLM, there's something interesting about that airline that always was, you know, I don't know if it's the blue color or what it was, but I always wanted to fly them. And last year we got to fly them Hong Kong to Amsterdam in business class. And it was with my wife and daughter. So there was three of us. And we strategically chose our little houses. One thing I didn't know about those houses is that they have alcohol in them. So they're, you know, I didn't know that. I just thought they were decorative houses. So we chose ours, had beautiful. We were in Dusseldorf, and then we took a cruise to Norway out of London. So we were traveling a lot in Europe after this flight. And at the Hyatt Regency in Dusseldorf, my wife left them in the room. And I mean, so heartbroken about this. Now, two things. The hotel was great, and they found them. And by the way, we discovered we left them in the room. We were on our flight from Dusseldorf to London when we realized we didn't have them. So we're already, you know, far away in another country. We can't go back and get them. Two things is they went and got them and they shipped them to us. We had to pay, I think, 55 euros to ship these things, which hurt a little bit, but they're special, right? It's a good it's one of the nicer gifts you get for flying business class. And unfortunately, because they had booze in them, they had to like take the pop the top off the little chimney and dump out all the booze, and they didn't give us the tops. So I have these beautiful houses, but they don't have a top on them, but they're sitting there. And it was worth 55 euros to have them shipped here. I was so heartbroken about it because I had been looking forward to that for so long. And then to get three of them on one flight was really cool. And, you know, KLM business class isn't anything special. You don't have like direct aisle access from all the seats, but the service I found to be really good. I've flown them a few other times, not in business class. Really like the airline. I don't like the fuel surcharges always with Flying Blue and stuff. But and what did you paid with Flying Blue miles, or how did you pay for it?
Yeah, I used Air France KLM Flying Blue miles for that trip.
Yeah, so that's a good program though, because they often have transfer bonuses. And sometimes they have really crazy sales with their promo sales. Like a couple of years ago, we flew France from Paris to Detroit in the economy for 9,000 points each way, just transferring in. So, and they also have business class promos and different routes and stuff. So that's a program that people should absolutely kind of keep an eye on with all their promotions. And I often find them have decent award space to Europe, especially the last couple of years where it's been hit or miss compared to some of the other programs. You know, you are paying a little bit in surcharges, but I have enjoyed flying both of those airlines, even if they're not always the best product in business class. I found the service to be good, even in economy on Air France, surprisingly good. So I can certainly recommend that. Did you have anything else that you wanted to share about before we go? Any upcoming trips other than the one to Europe? Any amazing redemptions or anything else?
That's kind of like the big trip I have planned so far, but I've really enjoyed the different free cruise offers from the casino status matching, from Carnival to Holland America to Royal Caribbean and Princess. Before this, the status, the casino matching, I had been on one cruise in my life like 12 or 13 years ago, and it's changed a lot. So I really enjoyed like that, kind of like those little teaser free samples of the different cruises and the different cruise lines, and I'm really glad that was an option for me. And I know you've done a few cruises too.
Yeah, I have been a little bit retired from cruising this last year. Just we're back at home, and with my daughter's schedule, we haven't been on a cruise since that Norway cruise last summer. But I think over the course of like 2.5-3 years, we did 15 or 16. I don't know, it was a lot. Maybe not that many. But we did Virgin and we did MSC and we did Royal Caribbean and we did several, I think 8 or 9 Carnival cruises because we were just sort of rolling offers. We got the first, you know, we did the matches where I got multiple with Carnival. I got 2 free cruises. My wife got 1. And then just playing a little bit on the ship, we had free offers while they were still trying to fill the ships. Now we're not getting any free offers anymore because more people are cruising. But yeah, it's been good. And, you know, just for people out there listening, I did an offer match for my son with Carnival a while back, and he never got an offer. And I've had people in the same case where they just never got an offer. And then eventually he got one, like recently, just came. It's just for, here's a free balcony room. And I did the match like well over a year ago for him. And, you know, I didn't pursue it too much because he didn't have a lot of time. But yeah, there's still opportunity there. There's opportunity with different matches in Atlantic City. So just land-based casino matches. Right now, Wynn in Las Vegas has their match where they're matching a bunch of different status. And one of the things with Wynn Platinum that you get is a Holland America cruise. It does require, I believe, you stay at Wynn properties twice in the 12 months. So there's a few terms there. But there's still plenty of opportunity for getting free cruises all over the place. And it certainly, and that doesn't even add in like UR Comped and some other stuff. And hopefully Virgin will bring back their cheap redemptions on, you know, Virgin Red with points, because that's even, that was such an amazing deal. So yeah, for the cruise industry, I feel like in this hobby forever, nobody ever talked about cruises, and there wasn't a lot of like great plays. Their credit cards weren't great, but it finally matured to a point where we can play the game and do a lot of stuff. And I love going on cruises. It's not the only way I would travel. I wouldn't want to like see the whole world off of a cruise ship, but it's a great vacation and it's a great taste of different destinations too.
Yeah, I think you touched on a big important thing where kind of these deals come and go. So you kind of have to jump on them if you're interested. If you're not interested, no big deal. Another deal will come around. So just kind of, you can pick and choose which ones you want. But if you see one you like, just jump on it soon, because it could end a lot sooner than you think.
And before you know it, you'll be a cruise veteran like Grant. Had only been on one cruise. And now thanks to this hobby, he's a captain. But yeah, it's great. It's interesting to see so many people that have been sort of converted, people that never went on a lot of cruises before, who jumped into it and have really embraced it and enjoyed it. And there's other people who are just like, that's the definition of a nightmare for me, being stuck on a ship with 5,000 other people. And on the surface, I totally get their point. You know, it doesn't feel like that to me when I'm on the ship, but I totally understand why some people just loathe cruising or just have no desire to do it.
Yeah, I think it also depends on the time of year and where you go. Like, if you don't want to be around spring breakers, don't go to Florida in March and April. Like, if you like certain things, but you don't like the crowds, just plan your trips around the crowds. And I like when I was able to try the different cruise lines, you kind of figure out what cruise lines you like, what size of ship you like, what kind of destinations you like. And you get all these data points that you wouldn't have before. And then if you decide to pay for a cruise, you kind of know which cruise lines and locations and lengths of cruise that you're comfortable with. And you get a better deal, I would think.
Yeah, which brings it kind of full circle back to the Hilton talk at the beginning with all their brands. A lot of these cruise brands are all owned by same companies, and they have different brands for different demographics and doing different things. And it's really matured to a point where there's a product for just about everybody, depending whether you're a family or you're affluent or you're just looking for a starter vacation, different types of food, different types of everything. And that's really where the entire travel industry is. We're at a maturation level where it's a lot more focused on who you are as a traveler and what they can provide to you in that demographic. And then for a completely different type of traveler, they'll have a whole different product, similar to hotel brands and all of that. Well, I think this has been a really fun conversation, a little bit all over the place. It's been fun catching up, but lots of good credit card talk. I feel like a lot of good takeaways for people out there listening, and I hope that everybody out there enjoyed it. Grant, where can people find you when they're not listening to this fine podcast?
You can find me online at travelwithgrant.com and also on Twitter at travelwithgrant.
At travelwithgrant. Yeah, check it out. He's on Boarding Area, but you don't need to do that. Just travelwithgrant.com. And you've been writing a lot recently. There's a lot of stuff that we couldn't even get into here. So definitely bookmark that and add it to however, you know, whatever your feeds are or however you consume the content. For this show, you can find everything we do at milestomemories.com and at milestomemories all over social media. We have the Vegas show, youtube.com/milestomemories. And a big announcement coming next week. Really excited to talk about some new stuff that we're doing. So look forward to that. Joe will be back with me again next week to talk all the Hilton stuff and all his recent travels as well. Thanks again for coming, Grant. Really enjoyed having this conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Sean. Sorry I missed Joe this week, but great to listen to you guys on the podcast every week.
Well, thanks for coming on, and hope to have you again soon. Talk to everybody later. Bye.